Record now. Recording. Okay.
You're on.
We're on. Derek, you want more air conditioning? I have it on low. Are you okay, Yeti?
I'm okay. I just came from a walk, so I'm hot, but I'll cool down.
Okay. If not, we can make it warm. Okay. Let's begin. Today is the 16th of September, 2018. We're between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I want to wish a Gemar Chatima Tova to the Talmidim sitting in front of me and to the many, many more who are listening. And I want to thank you. A number of emails came in with very nice words. I don't take it for granted. And I humbly say thank you for your kind words about my shiurim. I want to pick up where we left off, and I want to touch upon something. One second, where I... I thought I had it on my desk here. What did I do with it? One second. Anyway, you don't see a... nothing. No. All right, I know what I wanted to mention. I just thought I had the papers here. Could be I brought it back to the office. So we were dealing with Kaddish, and we're finishing out Kaddish, and we dealt with women and women saying Kaddish, and the entire question of what's the importance of Kaddish, what are the sources for Kaddish, and we wind up basically reaching a conclusion that halachically, Kaddish has really no relevance to the deceased. It more has to do with thanking God. The original Kaddish is a Kaddish the Rabbanan, thanking God for the rabbis, for the Torah, for the teaching. But nevertheless, Chazal say it's a great merit if we answer Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavarach. And someone has departed, the minute came that if the Yatom leads the people in saying Kaddish and gets them to say Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavarach, it means that ultimately what's happening is you're bringing covered to your parents' memory. You're creating a tremendous acknowledgement of the Ribbono Shel Olam in their memory. And this is the importance of Kaddish. And psychologically, kabbalistically, mystically, it became infinitely more important than any halachic basis. Now, when all was said and done, a Talmud listening via the website the question into me, he raised the issue, and lo aleinu, it's a problem I had to deal with recently. What do we do if your father was a Rasha? Your mother was a Rasha'a? Do you say Kaddish for them? And he sent me a number of articles, two of which, I believe two came from Chakira, and one came from tradition, one came from a Chobavei Torah publication, one deals with it psychologically, one deals with it philosophically, that's Volovovsky, one deals with it halachically, my student Rabbi Dr. Mark Dratch, and from Chobavei Torah, the Rosh Yeshiva Rabbi Dov Linzer deals with it halachically. The other article, I believe it's by Rabbi Pelkowitz, Dr. Pelkowitz, David Pelkowitz, deals with it more, I would say, psychologically. And here it is, right in front of me when I was looking for it. And it all goes back to the Shulchan Aruch, Reish Mem, Sif Katan in the Shulchan Aruch, Yud Chet. And this is black and white. Mamsa chayev bekavod aviv uvemorao. Afaya aviv rasha ubala veira mechabdo umityare mimenu. And here you have a mamsa. Now, what's a mamsa by definition? It means his father brought a mamsa into the world. I don't want to go in today to some of our political leaders, but there's no question if someone brings a mamsa into the world, he is not a good Jew. And the Halacha says, even if he's a Rasha, and the Shulchan Aruch says, absolutely, you have to be mechabit him, even if he was a Rasha. The Rama comes along, the Yesh Omrim, The Einu Mechuyev Lechabdo Aviv Rasha Ela Im Kein Asa Tshuva. The Rama comes along and says he doesn't have to honor his father unless the father did tshuva. Alright, and this is a basic machloket, and on these two opinions, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, you can find tens and tens of sources discussing it. I just want to make one correction. The fourth article sent to me, Honor and Parents Are Abusive, it's by Dr. Ben-Zion Sirotskin, who's the psychologist, has a doctorate. So, Wolowowski, Chakira. Mark Dratch was also in Chakira. Abusive Parent by Rabbi Dov Linzer was on a publication of Chovevei Torah. Now, look what you have here. You have here a basic machloket, the father is a Rasha. Are you still obligated to honor him, or can you spit in his face? And this is a very delicate issue. Let me take it a little bit further. Tell me, has anyone in this class met someone who is a total Rasha? Let me just see that I have the names. Binyamin, I know. One second. Moshe Afrik is not here. Benjamin Baruch, right? Do you go with Benjamin or Binyamin? Either way, okay. So I have two Binyamins sitting right next to each other. Welcome. You're back? One second. You went to Tel Aviv? Our last conversation?
After Sukkot.
After Sukkot. All right. Baruch Hashem. Tell me, did anyone ever meet anyone who's a total Rasha? Jack reminded me in my seventh book, Washington. It's amazing what people catch on. In that book, there's Musa, there's a little Hashkafa. No one comments on it. But a good story, you don't forget. Know what happened to me in my first rabbinate? Let's go back to 1962. I come to Maplewood, New Jersey. And there's this Levi who speaks Hebrew. Bronx boy originally. And lo and behold, within a few months in the rabbinate, my phone doesn't stop ringing. He's on the front page of the New York Times. I still remember so many years later, 1962 to 2018, Bation Company stock theft. Only it was $1 million or $2 million, which, you know, $1 million today is nothing. Every Jew in Jerusalem is a millionaire. We all agreed about that when they did a survey in the paper. I'm being serious. If you figure, if Herbie figures what his apartment is worth and his retirement savings, Herbie, who survived hit and lived to see grandchildren in pristine units in the army, he's a millionaire. But it's 1962, Herbie, when we first met, $2 million stock theft. Then a few weeks later, he's arrested again, running a still in Pennsylvania, making whiskey without paying the taxes on it. You follow? And then there was something else, counterfeiting money with the... every person. This was the story Jack remembered. I told many decades ago that I had a teacher, Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapperman. So Klapperman, he taught us sociology in college. Wonderful individual. Yitzchak, you studied with Rabbi Klapperman? So he was a musmach of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik yet. He just died recently, Zichrono Livracha. So Rabbi Klapperman said, what do you do if you have to eulogize someone who just got out of jail? And he told the story that one time he had to handle a case in Newark where this woman died. The mother and her son was a gangster, and he had to give a eulogy, and he said, I want you to know she had Agmas Nefesh from her son, but I want to tell you about her son. He told me that when he broke into a house and he saw Shabbos candles, he did not rob from that house. He walked out. And that's what he said in the eulogy. I don't want to go so far, but you can all read Washington and see the hesped I gave for my Levi, for Leo, when he died. It was one of my final hespedim in the Rav.
Do you remember Longis
Lohman? I know the name, but...
he's the guy that built Haaretzion.
Longis Lohman, very good.
And he's, and Rabbi Wein once said, he's a Shomer Shabbos, he didn't kill on Shabbos.
Didn't kill on Shabbos. And I have a shayla, if you're allowed to sit in the chair you're sitting, because the Rothsteins gave a fortune of money to Yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Chanan in the 1910s and the 1920s. And you Google Arnold Rothstein and find out who, what became of Joe Rothstein's son. But anyway, coming back here, it's a very delicate issue. I eulogize this guy and read what happened to me. Is anyone a total Rasha? It's a very delicate question. On the other hand, look at another aspect. No one in this room has a perfect life. If anyone will tell me everything is perfect, it is absolutely impossible. Mima'amakim karaticha Hashem. And the Rav said time and again that the whole heter to daven, to stand before the Ribbono Shel Olam in daven, the whole heter is that we have so much difficulty, we plead with God to help us. I don't have a perfect life. I don't have to spread this, that. Baruch Hashem. Overall, I'm doing great. No one has a perfect life. Absolutely not. I know some of you intimately. And I know the tzaras you have. I know the problems you have. And there's no exception. This is the nature of human existence. But if you're an intelligent person, you don't talk. It's part of life. You roll with the waves. You don't want people to gossip. What's the famous expression? You don't wash your dirty linens in public. Am I right or wrong? That's basic rules to life. All right. All right, now, why am I saying all this?
Somebody should have told that to Lauder when he wrote in the
comments. Herbie, relax. How does this come up? All right, so this question, I want you to know, I had this very shayla. I never had it before. I had it about 2 years ago. And the story is very simple. A Talmud of mine, I knew his parents, I know his siblings. This is a fine, fine Torah family. And among the children and grandchildren that came out of this family are world famous people who have done fabulous for the Torah people. The grandfather died, the father died, my Talmud is a son. My Talmud is in his 60s, he's no youngster. All right. His father molested granddaughters. And you hear this now time and again, lo aleinu. A week doesn't go by that someone isn't arrested for molesting family members. When his father died, my Talmud asked me, he doesn't want to say Kaddish. Doesn't want to say Kaddish, his father did this, his father did that. I told him, La Halacha, I would say Kaddish. I said, your father wasn't entirely bad. He did a terrible thing. I know the results. I agree. On the other hand, he and his wife raised an entire family, children, grandchildren, everyone is religious, raised at a time when it wasn't as popular to be religious as it is today. We're talking about the 40s into the 50s, early 60s. By the 60s, it was a little easier. And I told him something else. Why do you want to have people gossiping? You know your father. I know what happened. You confide it in me. I know the whole inner story. I know the results. More than my Talmud, I know many other members of his family. But isn't going to look strange? You're not saying Kaddish, your father died. I want you to know he asked Rav Heschel Shechter. And Rav Heschel told him, if you don't want to say Kaddish, you don't have to say Kaddish. Literally, the Machlokes, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah. Halacha l'maisa, he didn't say Kaddish. During the year of mourning, at times when I was in America, we davened together. He's a wonderful Talmud, and he's very helpful to me. I couldn't, this past summer and the summer before, I couldn't accomplish what I accomplished in the States without his help. And a wonderful Talmud. He didn't say Kaddish. He said to me, Rebbe, I don't want you to get upset, but I'm not going to be saying Kaddish. And I tell you, the person who sent me this information asked me my opinion. That's my opinion. Is there room to differ with me? 100%. The Rama differs with the Shulchan Aruch. You can find endless questions, endless material. Resh Mem Sif Katan Yudchet in Yoredeya. I cited you. Yeah.
You've been saying about Kaddish, it's something you praise the Almighty.
Right.
No, it has really nothing to do with the person.
Well, I said that.
Herbie,
I'm very happy to see that you have digested my classes. I just gave that review before you walked in. You're absolutely right. But what's wrong with adding a schut? All right, the father did terrible things, and these stories that come out now, and they were mad at the grandmother, the mother. You know why they were mad at her? That she stayed with the father. And then I found out at a certain point she left him, and she couldn't live without him. You understand? She came back. This is, it is so sad. And the sex, what goes on in the world. But yet, if we wouldn't have the sex urge, we wouldn't marry, we wouldn't have children, we wouldn't get ourselves involved in all these family issues. My own bed, my own house, my own bank account, no one interferes. It's an open Gemara, right or wrong. Gemara in Yoma, Gemara in Sanhedrin. They knocked out the sex urge and chickens didn't lay eggs, right or wrong. So you see, you have to live. This is the challenge of life. This is what I eulogize Klausner, that he could handle Shir Ashir, he could handle Kohelet, but he couldn't handle Mishnah. And that summarizes exactly, and mental fitness in contradistinction to mental illness is the ability to be able to handle Mishlei. Shir Shirim is the easiest. You're a kid. Kohelet, all right. Ben Kovacho, I've seen the world. I'm sarcastic. You can, if you're smart, you can handle that too. But Mishlei is the greatest challenge. All right, so that's what I answer today. I think it was David Stein who sent me the material, and I thank you for the material. I saw Mark Dratch's article a while ago, but there's no black and white answer, and the harishut nitna. All right, now I want to move forward. I want to move a drop further, and I want to come into a world. We won't finish it today. But it's amazing what simple questions and response to literature uncover an entire world to us. And here I'm picking up with Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Bet, Siman Ayin. And let me tell you a little story that just happened. This is another student. And we forget, a student called me Erev Shabbos. And this student, the first student I spoke about was my student in the early 70s. This student was my student in the early 80s. Both of them have remained very close to me until today. So this student, parents should live and be well. I yet knew his grandparents, and everyone was from in this family. And he davens for years in the young Israel of Hollywood in Florida. I need not tell you, you go into the Young Israels across the country, there's no question that at least 90% of the daveners are Shomer Shabbos. Some of the Young Israels, it's 99%. This guy is davening in the Young Israel, and now he remarried Baruch Hashem, his Masada Kedushin, at the end of March when I was in New York, on that Sunday when I was so busy in the morning, and then in the afternoon the Siddur Kedushin, and his wife comes from Great Neck. So for Rosh Hashanah they went back to Great Neck, and there in Great Neck there is a big Orthodox shul. for the Benjamins. You're both from England, both. So United Synagogue, you understand? We're not talking now, what's it, the Federation? We're talking United Synagogue. Big Orthodox shul, the rabbi, a dear student of mine, I can mention the name, Rabbi Polyakov, Dale Polyakov. And that's where my student is davening. And he calls me and he's all upset. He says, I was sitting Abenon, you know, right close, right up front, and there were the big shots running the shul, and he says, the whole davening, first day, second day, they're talking all the time. He says, even more, he tells me, he had a Gemara, and a Schottenstein Gemara was right next to him, a little Gemara, the size they make, I think it's called this medium size, it's like an overgrown siddur. And he says, one of these big shot balabatim come down, and he picks up this Gemara thinking it's a siddur, and he sits there holding it upside down and davening, making believe, talking the whole time. And he's all upset and he didn't know, should he tell the rabbi? I said, you've been spoiled. This is America. These are the shuls. This is not a young Israel. You'll be lucky if 50% of the people davening there are Shomer Shabbos. And I may be overstating the case. In the New York area, I would like to believe I'm not overstating the case. But what are you getting uptight about? Now, this takes us back. And to him, it was a shock. I said, what are you going to waste your time aggravating the rabbi? You think the rabbi doesn't know what's going on? He has to deal with these people. He has to live with these people. These people pay his salary. This is not Rakefet's plan. Rakefet spoke many years ago, had the plan to save the world, that all rabbis are sent from Israel. It's like kashrut. You pay Israel, and Israel pays the rabbis. The shul and the rabbi money never gets involved between them. And that way the rabbi can be independent and the balabatim know Torah is Torah, and you can't say to the rabbi, oh rabbi, you need a raise. What do you need a raise for? This guy, the balabas is making $1 million a year and the poor rabbi has to get along with $150,000, which in America is no money. When you have 2, 3, 4 children and they need day school education, if you don't make $500,000, you're in the poorhouse. So the Rakefet plan. Now come back to the rabbinate. And believe me, Rosh Hashanah shocked me back to my youth. Let's go back to 1962 in Maplewood, South Orange, New Jersey. Herb, Dr. Weinstein's beginning the shul. I'm the first rabbi. We barely have a minion. People are doing the doctor a favor, driving to the synagogue to help make a minion on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. All right, Rosh Hashanah, bigger crowd. People come out of the woodworks. We're cheaper than the temples. So they don't mind sitting separate, men and women, if they're only paying half the price they would pay in the conservative Reform temple. Why did I do Rosh Hashanah besides speaking, which a rabbi also always does? I was the makri. What is the makri? The Baal Shofar has to blow tekiya, shvarum teruah, tekiya, medaf halten cup. You have to know what you're doing. I told my grandson, stand next to me and I'll show you what the trick is, how to use your finger so you don't mess up and you don't confuse the Baal Korah, the Baal tekiya. So in the shul where I'm davening now, I wound up being the makri. I've gone back to my youth. For many years it was Rav Shach. He died, Efishach died, and now the task has fallen on my shoulders. Rav Shach's son, correct. Yatzmicha, what are you talking about? He had a doctorate from Bernard Rebbel. Yatzmicha. He was a rav in South Africa for many years, that you don't know, before he came to America, where he was the assistant principal of Flatbush, and that's when he got his doctorate at Bernard Rebbel. So, let's not talk about being the makrid. Here I'm davening in a shul on Rehov Palmach in Yerushalayim. 98% of the people there are Shomer Torah Mitzvah. On Yom Kippur, a few people wander in who are not Shomer Shabbos. But in Maplewood, South Orange, people don't know what you're talking about. People know no davening. People can barely read Hebrew if they read Hebrew at all. davening, how do you keep the place? And this question comes up. Can you announce pages during davening? Now, I did more research. The tshuva is to Rav, it's in Hebrew, Gimel Ayin Reish Tzadi Lama Jud Vav, Girl Tselin. I believe it's spelt in English G-E-R-Z-E-L-I-N. I call upon any Torah Vadas graduate listening to fill me in who this man was. I dimly remember the name. Now, what year was the tshuva written? He gives no year. But when I opened up Chelik Bet, it was published in 1963. When I flipped the pages, I noticed that all the tshuva around this tshuva were written in 57, 58. So if we can have confirmation that Rabbi Gertzelin was in Torah Vadas, the Mashgiach Ruchani, in the late 50s, then we've dated the tshuva. What's fascinating here is Torah Vadas. Nowadays, you will never find a question like this in relation to Rav Vadas. And to those of you who don't know the Brooklyn scene, I'll explain it in 2 minutes. It's very simple. Torah Vadas began as a rival to Yeshiva's Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. Washington Heights had a yeshiva that served the Bronx and Manhattan. The parents in Brooklyn said, why can't we have a yeshiva with a high school ultimately? Why can't we serve our children? Why can't we open them to the universities that surround them? Let them go to yeshiva, let them go to college. That's how Torah Vadas began. Over the years, Torah Vadas moved much more right. Today, you're not going to find Torah Vadas graduates in the American Rabbinate in the sense that they're across the board in America in synagogues that resemble the synagogue I just told you about in Great Neck, or resemble synagogues in the United Synagogue. In Torah Vadas today, everyone, 90%, is Hasidic. It's an overwhelming Hasidic atmosphere. But in the late 50s, endless Torah Vadas graduates were in the rabbinate. Some already were in Reform temples, some were in conservative temples. Those who remained Orthodox faced Balabatim who wanted the pages announced. Okay, so now it makes sense why the Mashgiach of Torah Vadas is getting this question. He is their focal figure. He's the Mashgiach. The rabbis in the field are turning to him. He may also be an American product. It has to be checked out who Gertzelin is. I have a feeling he's a Torah Vadas graduate. He knows what America's about. It was a little bit difficult to ask Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky or ask other of the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yechazan, Torah Vadas. These were all Europeisha. But if Rabbi Gertzelin was an American product, he knew what was going on across the length and breadth of the United States. Now, I'll tell you what else is interesting. This tshuva, Torah Vadas, who do they turn to? Rabbi Nasha Klein. This tshuva shows you that here this immigrant came to America, a survivor. No one knew who he was, what he was. The only one who knew the true value of Rabbi Nasha Klein was Eli Wiesel. They were in the camps together. They sat together. They bonded together. Eli Wiesel, I'm speaking into Yiddish, keep in English, try. Eli Wiesel had gestampt from a Vishnuschach Siddishohem, Stup, Hoiz, whatever word you want to use. He came from a Vishnitz background. Here, he met in the camps. Menashe Klein had a photographic memory. He had all of Shas, Rambam. These are photographic memories. So it shows you that he began in America. He began as a teacher in the Kloisenberger dynasty, the Kloisenberger educational system. He became close to the Kloisenberger Rebbe. A lot of survivors became very close to the Kloisenberger Rebbe because the man's reputation from the concentration camps, what he did. He was a man who lost his wife with 11 children, and yet wherever he went, he saw to it that they kept up the spirit, they buried the bodies. The man was heads and shoulders. I heard this from survivors, Litvisha, who became Kloisenberg Chassidim in the camps. So he first taught for the Kloisenberger Rebbe. Then he went out on his own in Brooklyn and established the shtibbel, a bit of the kollel, and it shows you by the late 50s, he already had a reputation. That Torah V'das turns to Reb Menashe Klein. All right, what's fascinating in this tshuva, it reveals the whole mindset. What's fascinating is you're going to see Reb Menashe Klein, his entire attitude was negative. This is a survivor who's in America, in Brooklyn, and he can only envision rebuilding Torah in America exactly the way it was in the old country. And I don't believe anyone here, even if we use Rakefet's time machine and go back to a shtibbel in Litva, in White Russia, in some of the Hasidic centers in Poland, in the Ukraine, you're going to find one shul where they announced pages. And he begins the tshuva, and you'll see next week, next time we meet, how different it is, Moshe, from Reb Moshe Feinstein's attitude. You follow me? Totally different. Two different individuals, Reb Moshe on the east side of New York, but you see Reb Moshe, before he winds up in Mesifta Teferet Yerushalayim, he was in Cleveland, he saw other parts of America. His family was trying to find him positions. It wasn't easy. MTJ, Teferet Yerushalayim, happened to Reb Moshe. It wasn't planned. But he saw a little bit of America. Reb Moshe already, it was before World War II. It was 1937 when he came to America. A totally different understanding. But Brooklyn is Brooklyn, and by the late 50s, Brooklyn is becoming Borough Park. What we know of Brooklyn today, it's a whole different story. Have you ever been to Brooklyn, Binyamin? Binyamin, ever been? Where were you in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
You have relatives there? Were you on 13th Avenue? That's the main street, right? So let me just tell you, 13th Avenue is every last store Shomer Shabbos. Are the banks closed on Saturday? Absolutely. Everything is Shomer Shabbos. The banks are open Sunday, not Saturday. It's unbelievable. Do you know that in the 40s, my mother's second husband was the lay leader of the Shmirat Shabbat organization, Reb Moshe Appelbach. Every last store on 13th Avenue was open on Shabbos. And he went with Rabbi Felder, who was the rabbinic head. His grandson today is a politician, Simcha Felder. If you know what's going on in Brooklyn, they went from store to store pleading with the people to close on Shabbos. You follow? It's unbelievable what happened there, the change, but it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. Anyway, here's the way the question begins. And I love the way he writes, Rabbi, and he says, the Mashgiach of Torah V'das has turned to me. If the Rabbi, transliterated into Hebrew, Resh Bet Yud Yud, if the Rabbi is allowed to announce the pages that the Chazan is up to, because if he doesn't announce the pages, the people will not know how to daven. And he says, let me go into it, let me look at the sources, but I have to tell you, my feeling is that we have to prohibit this. Dati noteli isur im yaskimu imi chaverai. Now, from that sentence alone, we can talk for hours. Datin otel isua. Did you see the documentary on the Rav, The Lonely Man of Faith? Documentary on the Rav, put out by one person in the world against all odds, everyone laughing at him, making fun of him, a guy named Aaron Rakefet. And because of what happened on this past Rosh Hashanah, Rakefet got $1 million for that documentary. Never had to schnur a penny. Yitzchak, am I making it up or am I telling you facts? What happened on this past Rosh Hashanah? Do you've heard of Binyamina?
Yeah, right.
The Rothschilds founded it. Heavy money, one of the early Moshavim of the state of Israel today, Binyamina. There's a Rav there. His brother-in-law is a kid named Nachum Eisen. They are married to sisters. Nachum Eisen happens to be a grandson of a guy named Aaron Rakefet. Nachum Eisen is in heavy research in what he's in. If I tell you, you have to shoot me. So we'll leave it at that and just say he's getting a doctorate from the Technion. The Eisens went to spend Rosh Hashanah with their brother-in-law and sister, the rabbi. The guy gets up to Baal Tchokeah to blow, and he's having trouble, and a doctor gets up and sits him down. You just had heart surgery, you can't blow, the stress is too much. My brother, Dr. Levi Rothkopf, just confirmed it for me. I told him the story on the phone this morning. So they now need a Baal Tchokeah. So my grandson pulls a shofar at, and he blows. The next day he blows all 100 kolot. Kid is fabulous. Where did he get that shofar that he blew? That shofar my wife inherited from her grandfather. He was the Baal Tchokeah in a shul in East New York. In that shul in East New York, the rabbi was Abe Lebovitz's father. No Abe Lebovitz? Abe Lebovitz, as a little kid, remembered who blew shofar and who the Baal Shachrit was for his father, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, decade after decade. When the grandson-in-law of that man came to him, we got to do something for the Rav. $1 million on the table. And it's worth seeing The Lonely Man of Faith. The final edition is dedicated to Abe Lebovitz's memories, Zichrono Livracha.
Is it available? Can you buy it?
Yeah, it's, go online. I think it's $25.
Bookstore Chabrut has a pile of them like this.
Yeah,
okay,
no.
I'm sure
it's, I think 150 shekels each. I think 150. I can't remember for sure.
But come back here. All right. So now, in the documentary, now I gotta say, to the credit of Rakefet, once he got the money and he found the person who could put this documentary together, Rakefet steps aside. I can't be the boss. I have to allow freedom of thought, freedom of press. Let's see what comes out of it. And I told the person putting it, it's all in Washington, I tell the story in brief detail, and I told the person, you have to interview everyone. You can't just interview the right-wingers, the left-wingers. You have to send everyone, get a feeling of the Rav. So he interviews Rabbi Berman, Saul Berman, my classmate. And Rabbi Berman says that times the Rav would say, this is what the halacha has to be, this is what I want it to be. Then we'll see what the sources say. But he left an impression. A lot of people were angry at me. How do you allow that to be said? As if to say, the halacha is very subjective. Here you see it again. Dati note le'isur. Without even looking at the sources, he's telling you in advance, I don't like this. We have to do something. I think it's forbidden. And I'm going to try to see if I can reach that conclusion, if the sources will agree with me. It's a very delicate question.
He's not like Ovadia Yosef who would read both sides?
No, Rav Ovadia Yosef, when it comes to Aguna Mamzeret, Rav Ovadia begins, I must find the Heta. It's the same concept, but the sources have to fill in. So you see, this is a very interesting question. Moshe, if you're a Dayan and you have a difficult case, how do you approach it? And there is some truth to this, that you begin with a subjective feeling. But then you have to see if the sources match your subjective feeling. Well, that yes?
Someone is a big enough Talmud Chacham will have a natural halachic intuition
Beseder. But this is a basic concept, particularly in Aguna and Mamzeret. But here you see, he says it openly. He hasn't said a word, hasn't brought a source. Dati noten li'isua. The second part is very interesting too. Im yaskimu imi chaverai. What does that show you? That in the late 1950s, Reb Menashe Klein was not yet filled with self-confidence. He's not yet the posek of later years when he can when he takes on Reb Moshe Feinstein, and War III breaks out over the Erev in Flatbush. You're all familiar with that. I spoke about it for 2 years in class. What a machloket. A doctorate has now been written by Adam Mintz. Rabbi Adam Mintz just wrote a doctorate at NYU, I believe, on the very Erev controversy. But here is a young man yet. A young man, im yaskimu imi chaverai. Now, he gets involved. I'm going to summarize a world of sources here. It begins with the Gemara in Brachot, and you can look it all up. The Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, Simen Nun Aleph. Basically speaking, when you're in the middle of davening, you're not allowed to interrupt. Where does davening begin? Where you can't interrupt? Baruch Sha'ama through Yishtabach. You're making a bracha before the davening, you're making a bracha after the davening, after the psukei de zimra, I should say. No interruption is possible. Even for Yeheshmei Rabba Mavarach, you know that there's, the Achrom already discussed it, halacha lemaisa, we paskin that during psukei de zimra, you can interrupt to say Yeheshmei Rabba Mavarach or to say Baruchu. Outside of that, no interruption is allowed. Technically speaking, between Yishtabach to Hameya La'aretz, there already it might be easily, more leniently that you can say we can interrupt, because there the bracha Yishtabach ends and you haven't begun the Yodsei Ar. But there, once you begin the Yod Seyar, once you begin the Ava Rabba, Shema Yisrael, the Gaal Yisrael, that's all one unit. Kriyat Shema Ubirchatecha. And then you come Gula Letfila. How can you interrupt? You have to go in the morning, at least in the morning, at night. All right, there were more Mekil. But you're not allowed to interrupt between Geula to Tefillah. So what do you mean? They're going to have the rabbi interrupt and announce pages? And this is what I told you when I came to that minyan in YU. If my memory is correct, even before Hameyer, right after Yishtabach, they interrupted and described the next part of the davening and what it's about and spelled it out. Wow. More than that, he brings interesting sources from the Magen Avraham, right in the Shulchan Aruch and other Achronim, that it's not just you're not allowed to interrupt. He says, when a kid is in the synagogue and the child is making noise, even there the Achronim say that you're not allowed to talk to the kid. You have to signal. You have to signal him to be quiet. You have to signal someone should take him out. But to talk, to interrupt, absolutely not. And And he says, there where the kid is making noise, where the kid is bothering you, where the kid is dancing around, where it's certainly tzarech hatfilah that you have to shut the kid up, you have to quiet the kid down, you're not allowed to speak. You are only allowed to signal the kid, sign language. Well, if all you're allowed to the kid to stop and it's hurting and bothering, you're davening. Allah hat kama kama, you're not allowed to interrupt with speech. What's interesting here, and I couldn't believe it, that it alludes to another aspect of the davening, that I, al besariya chizena, I felt it on my own body. One of the great feelings of coming out of the rabbinate is Baruch Hashem, you can daven at your pace, you're not holding up the congregation, you have to have seichel. I told you I will never be a shliach tzibur even on a yard site because I daven much slower than the rest of the minyan. So I don't want to be toreich tzibur. For Mashrei I'll take over at the end. But so sometimes people, and this hurts me, but people think, Rakefet, they want to honor me. So I'm davening and people are waiting for me to finish Shema. Or people are waiting for me to finish Shmona Esrei.
No? And me one day.
It's a, I know. So what do you do? If Herbie wants that honor me and he's holding the people up. I haven't finished Shema. You have to wait for me. And you want to tell them, don't wait for me. It disturbs me. Let me concentrate on my davening. Isn't the hate? Right here's the source. Only to signal. You can't interrupt. You can't say, don't wait for me. No. You have to signal them. Gay, do, but don't say a word. Just with your hands, you push. Alachat kama v'kama, you're not allowed to say a word. Now, here he gets involved. Very interesting. If you went through the halachot for Tkiyat HaShofar, Tkiyat HaShofar, my son-in-law who runs Dominion in Rehov Hamach, so before I start being the Makri and the Baal Tkiyat starts the Tkiyat, you have to make the brachot. So my son-in-law will always announce, we're now going to make the brachot, the kahal should be yotzei. These brachot are on the mitzvah, tkiyat ha-shofar, and shechiyanu. You're not allowed to say baruch hu v'ruch shemo. You'll answer amen at the end. And since our minhag is to have 100 kolot, right or wrong, it can be divided up. There are different ways. The way we did it today, most shuls do 30 kolot, to begin with, and then you do 10, 10, 10 after the Malkiyot Zichronot Shofrot, and then you do 30 after the Kaddish, Tidkabel, and then you do 10 before the Oleinu. So if you add it up, it's 30, 10, 10, 10, 10, another 30, 60, another 30, 90, 10 afterwards, you have 100. All right? It's all one mitzvah. You're not allowed, Danny says, no talking aloud until after the final tkiyot when we reach Aleinu. And I have to say, in this shul, they talk a listen. In Great Neck, could you imagine having a United Synagogue? Could you imagine that? What would you say, United Synagogue? 50% of the people are Shema Torah Mitzvot or Rosh Hashanah and Kippur? It's even less because you get a bigger crowd from the outside. Much less, you say. So you see, now, tell me, is it really true that you're not allowed to speak during the tkiyot? All right, so meikadin, of course. What does the halacha say? Tzorech tkiyot, you're allowed to speak. Was the doctor allowed to go up and tell the Baal Tokeya, that's it, stop? Number one, he was allowed pikuach nefesh. Right or wrong? All right? Number two, it's Tzorech HaTkiyot. We're not being Yotzei. You're not being able to do it. Let me interrupt with a story my brother just told me this morning. My brother always used to go to Rabbi Zushin's Sheyurim in Bnei Brak. You know I'm talking about? The great expert. It's Rabbi Yashiv's son-in-law. Excuse me? It's Rabbi Yashiv's he was the great expert in medical issues. He's written Svarim. So a guy comes to Rabbi Zilberstein and he says, I've been about Tokaya for so many years, but I just had this heart operation, the stents were put in or valves were corrected, and am I allowed to blow shofar? And Rabbi Zilberstein told him, absolutely not. You're not allowed. But the guy was a wise guy, like we all are when we're told we can't fast, we can't do this. So the guy blew shofar. Do you know that it went back to Rav Zilberstein, he blew shofar, he came over to the shul and announced, no one was Yotzei shofar, you have to hear 30 kolot over again to be Yotzei Dioraita. My brother just told me the story this morning. Now,
what was the reason they did that?
He told them, I don't know where, my brother didn't say about the bracha, but he told him he's can't blow. And here he went against the Rav. Those tekiya don't count. What the halachic thinking is, you'll have to ask Rav Zilberstein. But the story is very powerful. Now, you are allowed. What about if between the bracha and this the achris say, and you see all the sources here, he brings it all down. What about if after the bracha you say, Tain li hashofa, tachat hashofa, you're allowed. Without the shofa, you can't blow. So that's sorech mitzvah. What are you referring to?
The Gemara in Brachos about eating. After you make a motzi, he says...
Right. Give me the melech. Exactly. But here...
That sounds like it's not lechatchila, but maybe you don't need to make a new bracha.
Right. No. None of this is lachatchila. That I'll give you this. That's right here in the tshuva. Lachatchila, you should be organized. All the achronim discuss it. You should be organized. I'm not going to go up and be a makri without knowing what I'm doing. Binyamin, you can't go up leklala. It has to be lebracha. You understand what I'm saying? Have to be organized. And what does organized mean? I have in front of me, I take from the OU, you have no Torah Pnibitzin, Binyamin, you know what I'm talking about? So they give you there the 30 kolot, right? They give you the sheet with the kolot, with the brachot, so I keep my finger. You see what I'm saying? I take that sheet up and I keep my finger. Tekiah. Shvam Tua. Tekiah. So I don't make a mistake. And that way I don't confuse, and I've seen makris who made a mistake and the Baal Tokeya gets all flustered. Which way do you go? Excuse me?
By Svadim they don't have
makri. They don't have a makri by Svadim? Interesting. Where do you daven? What nesach do you daven? But you daven Eidot HaMizrach. But you daven Ashkenaz Shul. But what Nusach Eidot HaMizrach? You got to know. Eidot HaMizrach, there's
Iraqi.
Because there's very big differences. The Taimanim, the Moroccans. Here, let me just tell you something. In Russia, I don't know if you realize the great miracles that the Russian Jews came back to the Jewish people. But if you go to Moscow, there's a chaver of Reb Yitzchak Kogan, who I first met in Leningrad in 81. He built a five-story building there. On each story, there's a different shul. When you walk in, it's Chabad. The second level is Ashkenaz. The third level is Sfard. And then you have Bukharin and Georgian. Two different, and I said, they daven differently. They're different chad. And you have a Shabbos elevator, so that everyone, you can get up the fourth floor, the fifth floor. But wow, if you say tiny, so wait a minute, if all this what I'm saying is correct, then why can't the rabbi announce pages? It's Torah HaTfilah, right or wrong? People won't know how to daven. You're allowed to say, take the shofar, give them the shofar. It's not a kid that you can push away with your fingers, your hands, your signal, all right. We were playing with great-grandchildren on Yom Tov. All right, the kids run back and forth, fine, good. give them candy. Everyone should give out candy in a shul. A kid should have a sweet tooth about a shul. So, tzorach hatfila. Why not? Right or wrong? Ah, gentlemen, look at the distinction. And here we come to the heart of the tshuva. We get involved in an issue that becomes endless when you start to analyze it. What does it mean? Give me the shofar. It's for me. The guy blowing it. For the thousands of people listening. Is tzorech hamitzvah for all the Jews involved. If he doesn't blow the shofar, he's not yotzei. I'm not yotzei. Another few hundred people are not yotzei. Here, what do you mean tzorech hatfila? I'm the rabbi. I know how to daven. I know how to flip the pages. I still remember Mrs. Cohn, Sheila Cohn, in 1961, I'm going back to, she said to my wife, "Wow, your husband knows every page in the Siddur." You know, I could announce the page so quickly. Sure. This is blowing shofar. The rabbi is as involved as the balabas sitting in the 29th row. When you talk about interrupting the davening, for who? I'm totally conversant. I don't need anyone to tell me the pages. I, Chaim Yankel, need someone? That's his problem. How can I do a sin to help Chaim Yankel? Follow the difference? When we talk about blowing shofar, shofar itself, there is no question about it. It's a mitzvah for me, for you, for the rabbi, for the Baal Toteya, for the Shamus, for everyone there. But davening, the rabbi is going to announce pages, interrupt his davening? Doing a sin? Doing a sin for whom? For another Jew? How are you allowed? Ah, he doesn't know how to daven. That's his problem. Let him prepare the pages in advance. He can have a solution. But you're going to interrupt and announce the pages? Absolutely not. Very fascinating. Yes, Tony.
The person who's asking, who needs to have the pages announced, can he fulfill his mitzvah just by hearing the guidance?
I'm going to come to that. You're very good. You're machaven to what he says later. But the concept, but right now, he makes this distinction that when you talk about interrupting the tkiyot, it's for you, for everyone. When you talk about announcing patience, it's for Chaim Yankel, it's for Joe Schmo, it's not for you. You know how to daven. All right. Very fascinating. Now, tell me, when do we, yes, interrupt the davening? Minig Yisrael, Yalav Yavo, Reish Chodesh night, Mariv, Moshe, right or wrong, Yalav Yavo. But that's a poor example because there, it's not like the morning. It could very well be you are allowed to interrupt between Geula L'Tfila. It's not like the morning. Between the nighttime davening and the Shmone Esrei, you're allowed to interrupt. For Haraya, if you come into Shul late, what's the halacha? What's Midrash Yisrael? No? What do you do? You sit the Kala saying Shmone Esrei, you start Shmone Esrei, then have Tfila B'Tzibur, and every other part of the davening you do afterwards. So there you can interrupt with Yalla V'Yavo, but that's no proof to the morning. What's interesting about nighttime, if you notice, some people interrupt and other people they give a clap, you get bangs. They don't want to say Yalla Biyavo, and one guy bangs louder than the other one. But this is a fabulous, fabulous insight of the Mishnah Halacha that my interrupting is not for me. It's for someone else. Since when can you do a sin to help anybody else? Okay, and hold on. Tell me. And the rest of the shiur beyond this point. Now we're not going to finish the tshuva. This opens a Pandora's box. Watch. Where do we first find this discussion in the Gemara? You see your grandson? Have nachat. Shabbat Dalid Amid Aleph. No, you don't have to apologize. You went through what you went through, and he has to do what he has to do. But that you have such a grandson, this is a little bit to do with your genes. That's the inspiration. Gufa, boy Rabbi Barabaya, hidbik pat tan betanor, hitiralo lirdoto, kodam, sheyavoli de chiyuv chatat, laman hitir. Lachedim, matkev larav sheishet v'chiyomrim lo liadam chatei kamei sheyiskeh chavero. Translation. It's a famous Gemara. Some guy right before Shabbos, I should say after Shkia, because the whole question in the Rishonim that period between Shkia to Tzeitra Kachavim, but I guess. After Shkia, a guy hidbik pat l'tanur. He put bread in the oven, on the wall of the oven. If you see the way they bake pitat, you can see it today. And right now, it's not baked yet, but it's going to be baked. If that bakes, it's chayev skila. It's a terrible lisa. And he said, "The araita, one of the lametet malachot, you're baking the bread." So they permit another person to knock it down before it should be completely baked. And Achashira'ah, Rashi explains, someone else saw and he grabbed I don't know what you would call the implement they used to scrape it off the wall and get it off before he should b'chayev achatat, because he did it b'shogeg. So the Gemara asks, how can you have such a concept? Do we tell a person to sin to save someone else? And I will quote to you how Schottenstein explains it. Another person saw the first person attach the dough and comes before us to ask if he should transgress the relatively lesser Isa against removing dough from an oven wall so as to save the first person from violating the more severe Torah prohibition of baking. And this is the question. And the Gemara says openly, logic dictates that we should never tell a person to commit even a comparatively minor transgression so as to benefit his fellow and save him from an even more severe punishment. And this is the basic Gemara. And it seems from the Gemara a clear rule that you are not allowed to do even a minor sin to save a person from a major sin. What minor sin is involved here? It could be that if you knock it out right away, it won't be finished. But if you leave it stay and nighttime falls, you have an isa d'oraita of baking. And whereas if you knock it off, what are you doing? It's Spain with Shmashat. That's one way. Another, there's a whole question among Rishonim, what is the sinia? Could be it's a din in muktzah, you're not allowed to touch this, etc., etc. But do a minor sin and save that Jew from a chiv chatat if it's bishoke? Yes, Moshe.
Tosfos there quotes a number of Gemaras that seem to go against this plow. Therefore, he gives a number of rules when we do and when we don't say it.
Watch. The Tosfos starts an entire stream of Shuvot that deal what the limitations are. But the basic klal is you're not allowed to do a sin to save your fellow man from a sin. All right, now I want to show you a Noda B'Yehuda. This Noda B'Yehuda is quoted and becomes the centerpiece of the tshuva of Reb Menashe Klein. As I've told you many, many times, the Noda B'Yehuda was Zeicha, his tshuvot you cannot ignore. He was a gadol shebegadolim. He and the Chatam Sofer, heads and shoulders above any other tshuvot written in that period, the turn of the 1700s into the 1800s, the turn of the 18th century to the 19th century. These are the two giants. I'm quoting from the Noda B'Yehuda, HaShalem, issued in Israel, Orechayim. I'm quoting from Tshuva Siman Gimel. A very, very brief Tshuva, but a very, very fascinating Tshuva that involves our own lifestyles. We don't have a date on the Tshuva, but we can imagine it's around 1790, let's say. And he was asked the following question. Masha Shal Ezad Dif Bimei Hakayet Simli Hitacher Bekriya Leveit Neset Kadesh Yochlu Haskenim Gamkin Lavo Avshe Mishahim Ad Acharez Man Kriyat Shema. O Adif Lahashkin Bizmano Vyitru Haskenim Lagamre Likrot Lihit Palel Biyachi. This is a problem that everyone faces during the summer, particularly in the United States, particularly Chabad. You go into shuls in the frumest areas in America and they begin davening at 9 o'clock. Well, if you begin davening at 9 o'clock, even during the summer, even then, you're going to be oivizman kriyat shema. So that's a real problem. And all of you know, and I'll come back to it and give you more sources, it's very important to say Kriyat Shema with Birchatecha Lachatchila, because that is the original takana and how to be Yotze Kriyat Shema. So what we do, if we know we're davening late, we say Birchat Torah, say Shema, is a bidiyevit bidiyevit. Lachatchila, you're not supposed to daven late, and you have to say Kriyat Shema ketikuna b'birchatecha. So here you have a community where the older people can't wake up so early. I don't know why the older people, I find it just the opposite. The older people, I wake up very early, and it's the younger people that have the problem. But the older people, maybe Bismarck Kleipzig, till they get themselves together, it takes time to go to shul. All right, I don't know. But they want to know what to do. Maybe it's better to make the davening later. And if we make the davening later, the old people can have a minyan. Or no, we should make the davening early, bizmano, and we'll be yotzei kriyat shema bebirchotecha, and let the old people daven b'yichidit whenever they get themselves together. And that's the question that the Noda B'Yehuda got. And he wipes the floor with them. Ani tama v'chirmim l'adam chatei kidei sheyizkecha v'edcha, and he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos, v'hamakdim v'zariz meshubach u'mitacher posheyahu. And with very few words, he says the person who wakes up early and davens promptly and davens on time, he is to be praised. And the person who davens late, He is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate sinner. He says posheyahu. If the Nodav Yehuda calls you a posheya, you are a posheya. So you see, this klal Reb Menashe Klein takes for himself. What are you hiding your head? Let the people know where the daven, let people know where the page is. You are not allowed to sin. You cannot interrupt the davening. You don't need, you know where the pages are. That Yankel should have gone to Cheder, should have studied, should have prepared, should have marked the pages. There's no need for you to transgress to save him.
Does Rav Moshe deal with this topic?
Relax, we'll get to Rav Moshe, but that's after Sukkot. After Sukkot, let me, one second. Now I want to tell you something. All right, you'll see what the Nabi Yudha deals with. Tell me, how many of you grew up in Germany? Let's go back to Germany, 1920s. When did they daven Mincha Maariv during the summer? Let me go a little bit better. A guy named Rakefet was in Kew Gardens Hills this past summer. Whenever he could, he did not daven in any of the many, many, many synagogues in Kew Gardens Hills. But he went 5 minutes away by car to Hillcrest, Young Israel, a neighboring community, to daven Mincha Maariv there. Because in Hillcrest, and later I found out on Tisha B'Av I taka daven the same minyan in a part of Kew Gardens Hills, there's what's called a plug minyan. What does a plug minyan mean? Very simple. Herbie Maltz was Makabel Shabbos early this week. I can tell you that Herbie Maltz was Makabel Shabbos early because he was sitting next to me. The plug this week was, if I'm not mistaken, 5:30. 5:20 was Mincha. 5:30 was the plug. All right, I'm positive. 5:30 was the plug. I told my wife to light candles at 5:40. What do you mean a plug? It's broad daylight. Right or wrong? We're davening Mincha at 5:20, and we're davening, you can start Kabbalah Shabbos, it doesn't matter, before the plug, but we're going to reach the Baruch Hu 5:30, 5:35. We reached Baruch Hu 5:45. No, broad daylight. No, Moshe, tell me what we're talking about, Sugir, after Sugir in Masechet Brachot. When is sunset? When are Yotze? When is nightfall? So then we're not going to solve that problem. Wow, you begin with a plug, you wind up with Rabbeinu Tam. Remember, we spoke about it many times. When the Satmar came to America, they were lighting cigarettes when every other Jew already was Makabel Shabbos. Right, Rabbeinu Tam, L'chumra and L'kula. All right, there was big machlokes, not a simple matter. But the Satmaruv understood that in America you can't do what you did in Hungary for many reasons. And today in America, I hope that everyone is Makabel Shabbos early. If you hold Rabbeinu Tam, Bavakasha, no, a plug minion. You know what the advantage is? You don't have to go out again at night. An older person, nighttime. Somehow, an older person at night, you're tired, it's beautiful. A plug minion every day of the year in Young Israel of Hillcrest. Maybe not Yom Kippur, but on Tisha B'Av there was in Kew Gardens Hills. And all you have to do at night is be Chayzer Kriyat Shema. And even then, there are some shita that after the plug you don't say, it's really nightfall, it's really all right, we don't paskin that way. So the Nodav Yehuda says, and you said in your inquiry, why is this any different than the plug minyan? And by the way, I'm told in Germany, all the minyanim were like that during the summer. And I can tell you in Russia, the minyanim have to be like that. Because if not, you're going to wind up saying Baruch Hu 10:30 at night. I'm not talking now the white nights. We'll come to that next time. But you're going to end up saying Baruch Hu 10:30 at night, and it's very hard to say over Kriyat Shema that he can do. But to go out at night and in the street and to find the shul, all right. So the people asked him that question, that we have a plant minion to accommodate the older people. Why can't we make a later minion in the morning to accommodate the people? So Rav Nachman, what kind of comparison is that? And you say that it's hard for the tzibur, so let's accommodate them in the morning too. And he says, no, you can make no such comparison, because those who daven marav early, yesha malis moch shehabei poskim somchim al Reb Yehuda brachot avchafava miralef uzman avit acha plaka mincha. Very fascinating. No comparison. You're wrong. And then he says, and now let's understand, the people who come to this early minyan, even if they want to be machmir on themselves, but they're not going to have a minyan later. So they come and they're so machlekula. But here where you talk about making a later morning minyan, you're not yotzei. You can't, it's not the same. It's not like you're taking on a kula for the sake of the tzibur. Here it's forbidden, you're not yotzei. It's not like marav, where b'diyeved you can be samach and Rabbi Yehuda. Aval kan, elu hazri zimbi iro, heim ha-mitpalalim b'minyan b'boker. Here it's the opposite. The people who care about a minyan, they can only daven early. Elach shazkenim ha-atzlanim, the lazy elder people, let them daven without a minyan, because ein adam chote afilu chet kal bishvil sheyisker chaveiro. And this is the Noda B'Yehuda. This becomes crucial, absolutely crucial to Reb Menashe Klein, and why he totally is against davening, announcing pages during the davening. Okay. Do you start to sense a tremendous question here? Our whole lifestyle today. How many people here have been religious without interruption for endless generations? How many people here, did you read the weekend papers? Did you read the religious freebies? What's going on in Tel Aviv? Do you listen to the radio? What's going on in every major center in the country? Tremendous tents are being set up. Come in, daven. Join us, Tzohar, Chabad, Rosh Yehudi, etc., etc. All this tremendous outreach. Wait a minute. We can't do a minor sin in order to help people come back to Yiddishkeit? In order to save them from Chilul Shabbos, Nevelet and Treifot, Biot Asurot, the lifestyle of Barak, who boasts he never put tefillin on in his life.
Really?
Which Barak?
Yeah, Ehud Barak.
Ehud, not the judge.
No, not the judge. I don't know with the judge, but Ehud Barak. You don't read the newspapers, don't give boasted, underline the word boast. Tell me, what? We don't do minor sins to save major sins? We don't even do what I consider major sins to save even more major sins? Is this correct? Is the Gemara correct? Is the no de Yehuda correct? Is Rav Menashe Klein correct? One second, Moshe. Let me make it tangible. Let me spell it out. Moshe, you're now involved in outreach. Do you know what's going on in Israel? Do you know what South Africa began? The chief rabbi.
Shabbos.
Right, exactly. Invite people to your table to eat the Shabbos meal. No? 10 cars pull up outside your house. All right, let's give Erev Shabbos.
Well, what sin did I do then?
You invited them to eat at your table, Messiah Eli De Avera.
The question is whether Mr. Yehuda applies to something.
What do you mean? He's a Jew. I'll give you a different question. A car stops you on Shabbos on Rehov Palmach, and he asks you directions to Mitzah Kadesh. And then what do? Do you give him directions? You don't give him directions. Oh boy. What do you do? That's serious.
That answer, I told you what happened to me.
I asked the Rav, so the Rav told me, give him absolutely direct directions, being the Mayat and Chilul Shabbos. Rabbi Lichtenstein, I told Aaron afterwards what my main Rabbeinu said. He didn't like the answer. He said, no, it's Misayei Eli De Avera. I wrote to Reb Meisha, I never got an answer. Because by then it was the 70s, it was political, a question like that, Israel, Shabbos, Chileh. So those around Reb Moshe evidently never showed him the question. You follow me? But
one can make a chiluk between giving directions to a guy who's driving a Shabbos and inviting him to your house for Shabbos.
Moshe, believe me, I'm aware. I'll go even further. I'll show you where now we'll go to the Chafetz Chaim. No, you tell me what Chafetz Chaim, what am I referring to? No, when I got involved in the Mossad, before I got involved, they had a psak from Chaim Drukman. Chaim Drukman is one of the great heroes of modern day Israel. So Chaim Drukman, I write about this in Washington, I don't mention his name, but it's real. Chaim Drukman said, we follow the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim paskin that to save a Jew from communist Russia, you're allowed to be Mechallel Shabbos, every Issa that you can imagine may come up, and to save the Jew with Pikuach Nefesh, Tov Shechallelu Shabbat Echad, Alechu Abeich Shabbat. I think with Hillel Hazaken. So when I came in, there already were Jews, Balei Tshuva, in Russia. In other words, the reason they needed me was to teach the start Gemara in Russia. That was the main reason. And we started it. It's an unbelievable story. From 1980, January 1981, until the communist empire fell, there was never a moment when there weren't two couples of ours in communist Russia with the man capable of teaching Gemara. You're sitting next to one of my shluchim, that's Rabbi Rubin. So here, I saw Shabbos people. I said, no, we can't be Mechallel Shabbos anymore. The whole concept of riding, and if they're Shomer Shabbos and they don't use the metro system on Shabbos, how does it look if we're coming in and we're using it? So they followed what I said. We stopped it. No one ever drove or rode on Shabbos. Same thing with food. We ordered kosher food for the airplane. Why do we have to hide the fact? Why do we have to nibble? Do you had kosher food in the plane?
No,
we had kosher food, but maybe.
But
I'll tell you, it could very well be that the kosher food came later. But in 89, I had it. I don't remember in 85, 81. I don't think we had it then. But anyway, the idea was, Chafetz Chaim said, to get a Jew out of Russia. So once again, I don't want to quibble, because you should say to me right away, Rebbe, riding in the metro on Shabbos, what's the issa? You follow? If you can get in without paying. Now, in order to get in without paying, you had to buy a card in advance, a monthly card. Forget about the money. The money was paid for from here. You had to sew it onto your coat. What if Shabbos Friday was November 30th, and Shabbos was December 1st. You'd have two cards sewn in, you follow? And now you had to walk past the lady, flash, and she would let you in. It could be the gate that opened, turned the light on, all right? So there again, it's an Issa, you can, all these things, it's not an Issa d'oraita. You follow what I'm saying? It's not a direct malacha. It's a medasek, we can say. All right, but without quibbling, but still, Chilul Shabbos is Chilul Shabbos. How do you permit it? How do you invite people? How do you get involved with the entire tshuva movement? How do you get involved with the tens of millions of dollars that the OU puts into the NCSY? And I told you, I once read that the OU estimates, NCSY estimates, it takes $50,000 to make a kid from. What you pay for, taking him to Israel, taking him to camp, what you subsidize. But wow, take a look what came out of this. Well, this very serious question. We'll come back to it. Finally, I want to endorse, we haven't finished. We'll come back to it. But I want to endorse, another question that comes up right along these lines. I'll give you the sources. Many of you know what the white knights in Leningrad are. White knights? The sun doesn't set, basically. It's unbelievable. The summer. Here in Tel Aviv, in North Tel Aviv, they have white knights. Some Russians came from Leningrad, and seems in Leningrad it's a night that you go crazy. Here in Tel Aviv, they go crazy that night. No, the white knights. When can you daven? When are you Yotzei Kriyat Shema? You can start making a morning minyan at 4 o'clock in the morning. Zman Kriyat Shema ends by 7, by 6:30. Same question comes up. Is it better to daven without a minyan? You're a medakdek and you wake up early, you daven without a minyan? Or is it better to say Kriyat Shema with brachat, birchat haTorah, and then at 9 o'clock go to the regular minyan where you'll be yotzei at least tefillah? And again, you see the same type of shaila coming up. And I'll tell you next time, there's one classic respondent who deals with it, who should be very, very fascinating to us, because it ties in with Yeshiva Yersidi's own history. Okay. Anyway, let me summarize. So today, fascinating class. A lot more meat we have to digest. But a fascinating class. It reveals America. It reveals Torah Vadasa. It reveals the shuls. It reveals Great Neck. It reveals what we're up against in the American rabbinate. And so much is in the tshuva, and the whole negative attitude of Reb Menashe Klein, which will later contrast with Reb Moshe Feinstein. But very fun. I'll see you tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem. So very, very fascinating. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off, Reb Lazer Silva, and I'll give you a little bit of a sideshow from the Agudas HaRabbanim and Reb Lazer Silva. Give you a little bit of a sideshow how Yeshivat Bnei Yisrael came to be where it is, how it began. Very, very fascinating. And then we begin Reb Lazer, the Agudas HaRabbanim, we sail into Agudat Yisrael. And that's a chapter in itself. It'll take us a little while. And after that, we sail into Vad Hatzalah. And then we pick up post-World War II, where the RCA starts coming on the map. I want to give out a number. Yitzchak left. This was for him. We'll give it to him tomorrow. This is for Jack. Oops. This is what I mentioned before. This is from Rav Asher Weiss, a talk he gave in Katamon, and I marked off where he starts talking about the older people and the problem of falling and having to drink on Yom Kippur. And if you don't accept Rav Asher Weiss, here's Rabbi Yosef Rimon, not Yosef Tzvi Rimon, I taught his sister, Mechvala, and I can't believe it. When over 80s are weak, one must instruct them to drink at least in Sheorim. And oh, what on? Then when you hit 90, he asks us all together fasting. All right, Baruch Hashem, we're alive and kicking, and I don't think we'll have to drink on Yom Kippur, but it's good to know. If anyone is interested, this is a list of the high holy day services in New York. A second, you know something? Kol HaNishama. Give this one second. Who knows Chaim Goldberg? Anyone here know him? Moshe, please give this to him. That's what we spoke about. This is an unbelievable article from the Daily News, September 10th, 2001. Can anyone tell me when September 10th, 2001 was? One day before Lo Aleinu 9/11. You see the article? Daily News, sky's limit for World Trade Center retailing. Sky's limited. And you know what happens the next day out of the sky. Very fascinating article. All Jews. Too hot for Tashlich. If you live in Belgium, the water, everything is dried up and there's nowhere for the Jews to go for Tashlich. About all they can do is what they do at the Shtiblach. Take an oversized pan, fill it with water, drop in a fish, and people say Tashlich. Here's an article, not anymore.
He's not there.
Here's an article from the New York Times. Where does the rabbi's voice come from? Very interesting article. What's referring to when a rab speaks min retazay in a sing-song fashion, and everyone imitates it? Seinfeld, Woody Allen, all the great Jews. Here's a fabulous article on a New York family in Flatbush that came from Egypt and opened a bakery in Flatbush, and people come from all over the world to buy their Arabic bread. Binyamin, as you said, this is a different nusach than the Ashkenazi baker is. All right, that's it until tomorrow, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. But it leaves me with the next problem. Who will see Simon to get it up online? Anyone who I'm talking about? You'll see Simon? Okay, so one second. Teach me. I'm going to give you two in a second. Teach me how to turn it off. How do we turn this off? It says nothing. Thank you very, very much for coming. And until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
Yeah,
one second. How do you turn it off?
I hope I don't mess it up. Recording.